This is the second part of a two-part conversation about one of Gordon Lightfoot's songs. The first part of this episode was released at an earlier date and is available for listening online. I hope you enjoy the conclusion of the conversation between me and my guest. Thank you in advance for listening.
The first guest of the evening is truly a poet. He's an artist. He is a friend and an inspiration to anyone who I think who has ever played the guitar or tried to write poetry. Would you please welcome Gordon Lightfoot?
I think I should be leaving those passing ships alone. And I think what he may be saying is that in the midst of this desire to be connected, to be part of a family, to return to shore, to extend the metaphor there, when he does see a passing ship, it brings home a whole bunch of things that he doesn't necessarily want to feel. Shame, regret, whole bunch of other things, and it's kind of emotional overload. So maybe he's saying, I really need to not be looking at this because it's making me feel too much. I'm probably zigging where he meant to be zagging. So set me right on this.
I thought strongly, and I listened to the song a whole bunch of times and reread the lyrics. You know, a passing ship can be very romantic. Where is it going? Who's on it? But I also think it's more of a metaphor for his old drinking buddies, his old flames. He's pushing 50, as you pointed out, by the time he writes this. He can't be a young buck anymore. There are other songs in his album that definitely refer to that. Again, perspective, introspective thoughts. And I just think, leave those passing ships alone. You know, whether it's a hot-looking woman or a big party or a trip where he knows there's going to be drinking or other drugs or something. I just really felt, in watching him in concert, particularly in the late 80s, he had really changed, because I knew him back when he was drinking and the concerts were quite different, particularly the after party. So I think he was growing up, and I think these lines, as you point out, do express regret, but it is a ship and ships can take you to different places also.
Yeah, it's such a brilliant metaphor. And the more we talk about it, the more facets that metaphor has. So it's great that we're talking about it like this. When the sea runs high, the sea runs wild, and I'm unsteady. Now, I looked this up because I didn't know what the sea running high meant. I thought it might have been about the tide. But the definition that I got meant that the ocean waves are very large, they're very turbulent, it's potentially dangerous because of strong winds or storms. Gee, where have we heard about this in a Lightfoot song before? And the sea level is significantly elevated, so it may be irrespective of whether the tide is in, but it does indicate that he has less control than he would if the wind were moderate or if the sea was not running high. Am I right in thinking that?
Oh, absolutely, because there's an old saying among sailors that in a storm, there's no such thing as a ship that's too big. And, you know, he has tackled this before. Another album that I thought was really overlooked, Endless Wire, on Daylight Katie, yeah. I think it was the only hit off that album. He talks about when the waves run steep and tall. You got a wave, and it can be large, but also the angle of the wave, how steep it is, whether it's 20-degree angle or way more, 60, 70. And also, I couldn't find this song, and I went through hundreds of songs, but he has a great line, which is an old sailing line in one of his songs, and it says, "The wind and the waves never wait for tomorrow." And I love that, because it means if you're in a storm, you're in an effing storm. You can't delay that. And so the wind and the waves never wait for tomorrow. It's right here, right now. I think you're spot on that. And when you're a sailor, particularly in a sailboat versus a powerboat, you're extremely aware of what the weather conditions are, because you may have to do a lot of tacking. The wind is in front of you and et cetera, versus just in a powerboat, just having more throttle. But sailboats, by the way, cut through the waves generally way better than powerboats.
Well, yeah, that's how they're built, I'm sure,
exactly,
is to do that. And I think of you in the warmth of your home and family, and he's envious that he has to be out on the metaphorical ocean. They're safe at home, and he wants that on some level. I don't know who he's thinking of specifically, because I think of you, and I don't know if he's thinking of any one particular person. He might be thinking about one of his exes. He might be thinking about Kathy Smith. He might be thinking about somebody that he has an eye for at that particular time. But it really is an envy of sorts that he wants to give up one way of life for another way of life. Whether that has to do with sobriety or not, I don't know.
I think this is one of the more powerful lines in the entire song. Because when you're a sailor, it's very romantic, but you're gone. And I'm sure while you're freezing your butt off on a boat and you think of, wow, there's my friend or my lover or anybody that's sitting in front of a hearth with the warmth of the family, that's very romanticized. And there's this great movie called A Turning Point. It's an older one. And real quick, it's just about two women. One becomes a professional ballet dancer, and the other one is just as good, maybe better, but she gets married and has kids. And the movie is just about how secretly they are jealous of each other. Because obviously the one woman cannot have kids, she's older, and the other one can't have a career because she's older and it passed her by. So sailors and metaphors about sailing in oceans and lakes and rivers and boats are all very romantic, both with a small R and a big R. But it's pretty cool to be home, safe, dry, and warm. Lightfoot also wrote a song called High and Dry. And, yes, and sailors like to be high and dry. You don't want to be low and wet.
I can't help thinking that the romance of being on the sea probably dwindles when you're soaking wet and you're freezing.
Yeah. And not you so romantic.
Are hungry. Okay, well, this is what you wanted, but it's they don't show that in the movies very much.
No, just the end of Captain's Courageous.
I guess, but you
that's
know.
That's pretty dry. But the overall, the thing I just love about this, and I've said this before with our other two interviews, I don't think anyone is as good as Lightfoot as putting the listener right there. You're on that ship. You're in that field as cold and drunk as you can be. You're on the wreck of the Emma Fitzgerald. You see the crew members. Nobody does it like him. And this is so brilliant, just beyond brilliant. And not only the metaphors and the references, but the whole gestalt of I'm a sailor. Sailors have great reputations. And by the way, you mentioned that he was read this book on sea chanties. One of the most famous sea chanties is, what do you do with a drunken sailor?
Yeah.
Well, the Beach Boys took that and made it into a pretty successful song called the Sloop John B.
Yeah.
Yes. And so I'm sure Lightfoot had dozens of sailing metaphors that he used over the time, and probably many, many were left unused because there's just so, they're so numerous and so fitting to metaphors about life, love, and death.
I think it was the Kingston Trio that actually did that song first. And that
I think you're right.
And that would make sense because, of course, Lightfoot is in that genre much more than he's doing what the Beach Boys were doing. But your point is well taken about the drunken sailor kind of thing. When love is true, there is no truer occupation. And he doesn't say truer than what, but I think the things that go along with being a true love, which means being a lover, being a husband, being a father, being a partner, all those things you can't do if you're away at sea. And so to have this true occupation, he's admiring that. And there's also, as we've said, some bittersweet feelings about, you know, I didn't really live up to this the way I could have and should have in the past. And there may have been very good reasons for it, but I thought that that was a really poignant line.
It really is. And again, the depth of the emotion, and how we can get a glimpse into his, not only his thinking, but his feeling, how he emotes. That's a very good summation, and I think you're spot on.
You're listening to Carefree Highway Revisited. We'll be right back after a word from a podcast partner or two. One minute, you're a teacher preparing for the new school year. The next, you're transported to a fantastical realm shrouded in forgotten magic. The creatures around you think you're a long-vanished mage. You have no technology. You have no memory of how you got here and no idea how to get home. All you have is misplaced magic. Haladar, the Last Surveyor, is the new fantasy novel by acclaimed author Rob Perrier. Available now on Amazon.com and RobPerrier.com.
In 1942, when the world needed a hero to fight the forces of evil, a woman had the courage to step forward. Her name was Helen Meeker. Her adventures took her across the United States and behind the lines of both the European and Pacific fronts. President Franklin Roosevelt trusted her judgment. Adolf Hitler put a price on her head. And in the face of overwhelming odds, she battled through everything that was thrown at her, dodged death countless times, and challenged the most diabolical figures in history. The star of more than 20 novels, Helen Meeker proved her grit and determination time and time again. And now the Long Highway Players bring the book series to life on the airways. These exciting dramas will place you in the middle of the action, immerse you in riveting drama, plunge you into unimagined intrigue, and confound you with dark mysteries, while giving you the opportunity to live adventures in a time when the fate of the world hung in the balance. Enjoy the exploits of Helen Meeker and follow author Ace Collins's In the President's Service series on That's Not Canon Podcast Network.
And may this gale blow us to the ones we love. I'm not sure what gale he's talking about, but he's basically saying, may we all make it home safely. And it goes back to, I hope you find your way back home before you die.
Oh, you know, absolutely. You know. The gales, I think, are life's troubles, life's challenges, the things that suck in life. But yet gales or storms or arguments can actually bring people closer together, kind of like got to get it out or say what's been building up inside of you. So I think the gales are those things in life that are obvious and inevitable, but also can be a positive thing if you use the energy off that to become closer to the people that you really do love.
Well said. Another day, another ocean. And now I'm sensing just a little bit of melancholy here as tones. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's the same thing that I have to deal with. Another day. People come, people go, nothing ever changes. Give me no lip, but stand aside as I press on. So there's not the same joy as there was before. It's just kind of, okay, I have to keep pushing on because this is the track in life I've chosen. And then A Sunlit Sea on the Last Day in October, and you went from fools to ghouls. So now this is the very end of the sailing season. And so you know right there that he's about to end the song because that time period is now past. And again, he asking, will you miss me from now on? Could be saying that to his fans, to his exes, to people he's worked with on stage, any number of people. And he's starting to think about his legacy.
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, give me no lip is a very common expression among sailors. If you ever seen the movie The Lighthouse, which has been out a couple of years ago, that expression is used a lot. Don't give me any lip. And that's because if you're familiar with the order, captain's in complete charge of the ship, et cetera, but there's a very strict hierarchy of who you report to. And if you're a lowly sailor and you're hauling up the anchor or swabbing the deck or cleaning out the heads, you're not going to give anybody lip because that ain't going to be welcome. And that's a very common expression. Yes, there's going to be another season. There's going to be more trips. And when he says, will you miss me from now on? Because the original or the first line is, will you miss me when I'm gone? So, yeah, I miss you or we miss him or we miss anybody when they're gone. But will you miss me from now on? Which I think, again, is a reference to mortality.
Could be, or it could be talking to people who are going out sailing when he's coming in, because that would make them passing ships. Hey, are you going to miss me in the future until I'm on the water again? I just thought of that just now. So I'm not very good at spontaneous literary interpretations, but there it is. So the song appeared on the East of Midnight album, as we said, and it came out in 1986. It was his 16th original album. It was the 9th track on the record. It was the 4th song on side B. So this is way down at the end of the album. I think I'll Tag Along was the very last song on the record. And we discussed that on this show not long ago. The album did not chart in Australia, New Zealand, or the UK. It went to 37th on the Canadian charts, and it did get enough to have a gold record. And then it was 165 on the US Billboard 200. So this is pretty obscure. And as you said, I'm sure that his label was not thrilled with the sales of the album. And we can talk about why it didn't sell well another time. But the musical part of it, we've touched on this already a little bit, but I really enjoyed the electric guitar on this. Now, Lightfoot, of course, was playing the 6 and the 12 strings, but the fact that they used the harmonics as well as they did, and then the guitar solo, which was not done by Red Shea or Terry Clements, of course, but I just loved the presence of that. It added just the right sort of muscle to the song when it needed that. What's your thoughts on your favorite musical part of it, since now that we've talked about the lyrics?
I love the percussion on this, and there's quite a bit. There's, what do you call them, wood claps and other things, and you hear them more in the background. And my personal guess is when you're on a ship, it makes all sorts of creaks and groans, and there's seagulls squawking and stuff. And I think Barry or whoever else did, there were two percussions on the album. I don't know if Barry was on this or not, but
yes, he was.
But there, and he's very good with that. Again, with the wood blocks and different things. If you listen to it, it's subtle, but it's there. And just like that opening instrumentation that I thought was the continuation of the wreck and an ethereal, mystical type sound to introduce the song when he starts singing, I think the percussion throughout it adds nice little spice to the song. And again, I may be taking this too far, but I think it was to replicate maybe some of the weird sounds, again, creaks and groans you get on a ship, particularly a sailing ship. They can make a lot of noise with the lines and the sails and all sorts of things.
Yeah, you mentioned that there were two percussionists. Barry was one of them, and then Lenny Castro was the other person who was listed as doing percussion on the song. The personnel, as you said, there were 13 musicians who played on this, and that calls for a pretty big budget. The people that I think probably played on this, I don't have a copy of the LP, so I don't know if they all played on this particular track. So if you do and you can set me straight on that, please do. But Lightfoot on vocals and guitar. The other guitarists were Bob Mann and Michael Landau, and they were both session musicians. Tom Skezniak played bass, keyboards, and synthesizer. David Foster, as you said, did keyboards and synthesizer, and I think he produced this album too.
He did.
Okay. James Newton Howard, who at that point was an up-and-coming movie soundtrack guy, played keyboards and synthesizer and also did some percussion. Mike Heffernan was playing keyboards, and then Lou Pomonti played the Hammond organ on this. So I caught pieces of all of those instruments, but of course, just listening, there's no way to tell who played what. Do you have an angle on who actually was playing on this particular track?
No, I didn't. I looked it up like you did and saw all the players. The information I saw was all the musicians that played on the album. But you're bringing up a good point. Obviously, this is tremendously expensive. I'm sure David Foster commanded a big check or maybe even a piece of this. One of the few times I heard Gordon not be angry, but I think there was more of a disappointment, a little bit of disgust. Like, okay, I really like this album, worked my ass off on it, and it just didn't sell at all. He said he lost money on it, so you're not in the business of making big album productions and losing money. And a lot of people, as you know, have criticized this album for being overly mixed, too many instruments. And I'm kind of wondering if David Foster kind of gave the Phil Spector approach, like they always said the Beatles hated the Let It Be album, which
yes,
was mixed by Spector. And they totally redid it and came out with another version called Naked, Let It Be Naked, which I think both are great. But You know, this is the only album that I'm aware of that has this much production in it. And I think there are a lot of loyalist fans, maybe not so great fans, but people say, wait a minute, this doesn't sound like the early stuff, particularly some of the more simple stuff that didn't have drums and all these layers. I personally really, really like this album a lot. And I think it's Lightfoot at its finest, particularly with the lyrics.
Can't disagree with you on anything you've said. I mean, either the quality of the album or the texture of the album. But I do feel that it was top heavy. If we needed to have that level of instrumentation, which David Foster and Lightfoot decided to have, you didn't need that many players on the field. I think you could have done this with a smaller budget and with fewer guys in the studio. So less of a studio footprint, because my sense is that he either put up his own money on this to fund the recording of it and then couldn't recoup it, or the record company put up a lot of money and then wanted to get its money back from touring purposes. I mean, I don't know how the music industry works on that, but it's understandable to me why he would lose money, but it has nothing to do with the quality of the songs.
I agree.
You're listening to Carefree Highway Revisited. We'll be right back after a word from a podcast partner or two.
Hi, this is Audie Martello, the host of the Mostly Folk podcast, a 60-minute foray into the music we all love. You will hear newly released albums, classic folk, country, and bluegrass music, as well as some traditional music that may or may not be true to the genre. Sometimes irreverent, often opinionated, but always entertaining. You may even hear a radio magic trick every so often, as well as numerous interviews via Zoom and telephone with established as well as indie artists. Mostly Folk is available wherever you listen to podcasts and always at mostlyfolk.org.
Did you know we have a full podcast series that walks through Bob Dylan's entire professional career? It's great for newer fans or anyone who wants to take a thoughtful tour through the last 60 years of Dylan. It's called A Bob Dylan Primer, and it's a 16-part serial. Find it at fmpods.com or anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Lightfoot was not super experimental. I mean, he didn't do a disco album or anything like that. But it is unusual that he has multiple synthesizers in here, and there's also three harmony singers in the thing. And as we've mentioned, two percussionists. And who knows if David and Gordon got along. And again, I agree with you. It is top heavy. I think it remains a signature album. And I would argue strongly, again, that it's extremely well done. I have heard acoustic versions of most of these songs. A good friend of mine, who unfortunately has passed, named Steve LaCroix, a huge Lightfoot fan, gave me a copy, and it's from rehearsal without the studio backup, and it's really, really good. Sometimes less is more, of course. But I know for a fact that Lightfoot really was proud of this album when it first came out. He thought there'd be a couple of hits off it, and there were none, as far as extensive radio play that I am aware of.
Well, there were two singles released from him, but we won't talk about those right now. If somebody wants to talk about Anything for Love or the other one, we'll...
No, I think you're right. I think Anything for Love did get some decent airplay. I stand corrected on that.
But the song wasn't played in concert at all, according to setlist.fm. And my thinking on that was it was a deep track. It wasn't one that most of his audience was familiar with. If they had bought the record, maybe they hadn't listened past side one, and maybe it just kind of got lost in the mix of the other songs. And it had to compete with the hits from that record and other classics. So Anything for Love and other things that I'm sure he played from this and from the Salute album and Dream Street Rose. Plus, the album wasn't well reviewed. Not only did it not sell well, a whole lot of critics really didn't like it. And I know that rock critics, they're not your friends. I mean, they'll turn on you just like they'll turn on a dime. But I think that's why he never played it in concert. Now, he could have done it with a four or five piece band, I think, and still carried it off. But he chose not to, and I think those are his reasons. We may never know.
Morning Glory, he played quite a few times in concert, and that's a song about one of his wives. But I also heard him sing in concert East of Midnight, the title cut. I never heard him play A Passing Ship, and I saw Gordon 104 times.
Okay, well, then you would have been in a good position to see
that. Doesn't mean anything.
to hear anything, no. But not only that, it's not been covered by any labels or professional recordings that I can find. Do you know of any covers of this that were done by named artists? I'm not talking about just somebody sitting in front of a computer and uploading something to YouTube.
I only saw the YouTube videos. I did a deep dive on it. There is a jazz album that's called A Passing Ships, and that kept coming up. But I couldn't find anyone that some people would know. Like you said, solo people who admire Lightfoot doing it and releasing it on YouTube or some other platform. But I guess we could label it an obscure song by Lightfoot. But I think anyone that maybe skipped over this album or is new to Lightfoot's work and wants to do it, I strongly encourage them to sit down, put this on, and listen to every song on it. I just don't think they'll be disappointed. As Stephen Stills said about Deja Vu, or any other good album, there's not a dog on it.
He's absolutely right. There isn't a dog on it. It's just a shame that Lightfoot wasn't able to cash in. There were a couple of artists that I thought could have done an okay job with this. One, there's no chance we'll ever hear it. And another, there's a very slim chance. John Denver might have done an okay job on this. And he has some exposure to Lightfoot's music. And then America, when they were still a trio, might have done an okay job with it. Is there anybody that you think this person or this artist might be able to do a good rendering of this tune?
You know, I reviewed your question. I really came up blank. If I want to say somebody who I thought does a great tale, and unfortunately he's passed away, it would be Harry Chapin. He was a troubadour just like Lightfoot and told great tales. But I'm drawing a blank here. You know, maybe in their younger days, the Beach Boys, again, or somebody that was noted for a song about ships and sailing or water and everything. But no, I drew a blank on this one, Mike.
Well, you know, when I think of other artists that have done songs about sailing, Jimmy Buffett is one, Rod Stewart is another, and Christopher Cross.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He might have actually, and Christopher Cross is still with us. So I think A Boy Can Dream, anyway.
I'm going to write them.
Okay, you do that. Quentin, as we're kind of winding down here, anything else you want to say about A Passing Ship?
Well, again, as I told you, it means a lot to me. It's a very powerful song. And again, I think it's one of a handful of songs by Lightfoot that is a summation of his thoughts, feelings, and behaviors over many decades. It is disappointing, like you said, that this wasn't a bigger hit. But you know what? They're not all hits and they're not all beloved. But for those of us that know just about every Lightfoot song, at least every song that's been released, I really feel this stands out, was not only with all the metaphors, and we've talked about the guitars, and I personally love the introduction and the percussion in it. The lyrics are just so strong and right up there with any song he's ever done. It's not a long song, but boy, he packs a lot into it. It's a tremendous song.
Thank you again for coming by today to join me and to talk about this. There is no one who is better informed on Gordon's music that I know than you, and hope to have you on again on the show very soon.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I listen to all your podcasts. You're absolutely fantastic. And those of us that are Goldies, as we're called, just love your podcast and keep up the good work, my friend.
And thanks for listening, everybody. If you like this well enough to listen to the whole thing, tell somebody about it. Carefree Highway Revisited is on Apple, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you get your listening matter. I'd like to make a special request for you to visit my Patreon page. I love this show so much and I want to keep it going, and you're in a position to help. Please head over to www.patreon.com/carefreehighwayrevisited. A dollar or two a month is all I ask. You can reach me, Mike Messner, at teachermike72@gmail.com.
Well, our next episode will feature my guests Kevin and Aaron Hester, who have been on the show before, and they will be talking about a song taken from the 1971 Summer Side of Life album, and that song is Miguel. That episode will be coming out in May of 2025. Until then, for Quentin Coots, this is Mike Messner reminding you, run for the roses, but don't forget to stop and smell them. We'll see you next time.